This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Well, I want to give you a disclaimer first, and my disclaimer is that I certainly don't come today as someone who has it all figured out, and I have many needs in my own life. And my home is far from perfect. We are still learning and growing, and we have daily opportunities, as I'm sure you have, for brokenness and for God's grace to flow into our home. I do want to allow for time at the end for discussion. Hopefully there's some things that will spark your critical thinking, and at the end we can have a time of dialogue and learn from each other. This is the wonderful family that God has blessed Linda and me with. We have 9 children, and they range in age from 20 to 2. By the grace of God, Linda and I are reaping the joy of having children who and teenagers who are making kingdom decisions. And as I said, we have many needs, and I'm daily in need of much strength, God's grace, His wisdom. But I just want to praise God for His faithfulness. And any good that can come from my life, from the offspring of my body, is really praise to God and to my wife. Now, she's not here to deflect that praise, but that's how I feel from my heart. I don't know if you're here with the attitude that I am, but if you're like me, you often feel like this poor man. We can all identify with the responsibilities that we're required to juggle, ministry, church, home, our jobs sometimes. You know, we have multiple responsibilities, and sometimes we feel very stretched, and we know the pressures that come with, you know, daily our schedules and the spheres of responsibility. You know, where do we fit in? Where do we put our attention to primarily? So today, what we're going to do is we're going to look at the home, and we're going to focus on taking care of our wife and our family, and that is in the same time as we juggle all these responsibilities. I'm not a juggler, so I can't do that. I marvel at the people that can just keep those things in the air. But let's try to do that with our responsibilities that God has given us. You know, if you're juggling, I think you can do it with eggs or about anything. And if you're juggling and you know how you do it, you know, it's amazing. Those things just fly through the air and you catch them and you release them at the right time. And that's what we need to do. And if one drops, if you're juggling eggs and one drops, it's going to fall and splatter. And you know, our heart is not to let any of our responsibilities to fall on the ground and be broken, but we want to keep the trust that God has given us. I want to make this observation at the outset, and you can maybe jot some of these down if you or make a mark in your handout notes if you would like to dialogue or discuss any of these. But it's been my observation that it's far easier to be a success in business than it is in the home with your wife and your children. And I'm even here to conjecture that it is easier to be a success in church and in ministry than in the home. Now, if we may not want to admit that, especially the second statement, but if we look around at what's happening, I think we would all agree that there are certainly elements that are easier. I want to start today with just a few stories. How well do you know the story of William Carey? Carey, we all know as the father of modern missions, and he's revered by, you know, mission enthusiasts from and heralded in our classes as such. And I'm not here to denigrate him at all. But did you know that Carey, in his personal family life, he fell far short of what we would all hold as an ideal. Even in his own day, many of the people, his contemporaries, questioned his insensitivity to family concerns. When he decided to go to India, his wife, Dorothy, or Dolly as she was called, really did not share that decision. She did not want to go. And she was really compelled against her will to accompany him. She was told in words like this, that if she did not go, to be dispersed and divided, that her family would be dispersed and divided forever, and she would repent it as long as she lived. So she really, she caved in and went, even though she didn't share the calling with William Carey. Well, things didn't go so well. William Carey, the area they were living in, their five-year-old son, Peter, died of dysentery. And for Dorothy, the grief really overwhelmed her. And she, combined with some of the physical problems she was having, it really pushed her over the edge, and she became almost insane. She did give birth to one other son, and after 3 months after the birth, William Carey wrote in his journal, "My poor wife must be considered as insane and is the occasion of great sorrow." Another missionary described her as wholly insane. Even those who came into their home marveled. They wrote things like this. An observer wrote, "While an insane wife, William Carey worked on his translation in a room while his insane wife was locked up in an adjoining room, frequently, quote, wrought up to a state of most distressing excitement," end of quote. So their children, William Carey's boys, were really left to fend for themselves. Their father was consumed with his work, and he was not inclined to really discipline them for any misbehavior. And when Mrs. Carey died of a fever, William Carey wrote in his journal, "This evening Mrs. Carey died of the fever under which she has languished some time. Her death was a very easy one, but there was no appearance of returning reason, nor anything that could cast a dawn of hope or light on her state." John Wesley is best known as the father of Methodism, the founder of Methodism, and of course we all admire his zeal for biblical preaching and evangelism. But likewise, his marriage really left a different legacy, and it's regarded as a cautionary tale for many who study him. His wife Molly, as she was known, was to leave him and return, or she left him on several occasions before they were finally separated at the end of their, they separated for good. Due to her husband's constant travels, Molly felt increasingly neglected. She grew jealous of her husband's time since he was away often, and she became suspicious of the many friendly relationships that he had with various women who were part of the Methodist movement. And John Wesley, for his part, he did very little to console his wife. When he left on a ministry tour in Ireland in 1758, his wife reported that her husband's parting words to her were, "I hope I shall see your wicked face no more." Now, whether that indeed happened or not, I'm not sure, but that is one of the things that history has recorded. They were reunited in England at a later time, but they clashed violently. Wesley refused to change his habits of writing to sometimes affectionate letters to other women. And Molly, she accused him of adultery and called down on him, in her own words, all the curses from Genesis to Revelation. So in 1771, she announced that she was leaving John again. And she writes, "For what cause I know not to this day, my wife set out for Newcastle, purposing never to return. I did not leave her, I did not send her away. I will not call her back. Those were his final words. So sadly, he was not reunited with his estranged wife, and he did not hear about her death until 4 days after she had died. If you go to the Wesley Chapel in London, you can find his bureau, where he has hidden compartments in the bureau, and as is recorded, there were letters in there that that his Amali found that were written to other women, and those were letters that caused the jealousies and the tensions in their marriage to escalate. Now again, I'm not here to minimize these men, their contribution to the kingdom. I'm not here to judge their personal lives. I don't stand here in that light at all. I'm sure they faced very unique stresses and that I cannot identify with. I'm sure of that. God has blessed me with the most remarkable woman on the face of this earth. And I cannot identify with their marital, their struggles. But we would all acknowledge today that that's not God's design. That's not his intention. And so we can learn from their mistakes without being critical, without being harsh, and without being judgmental. And that is the, after all, isn't that what we are to do with all men, even today? And so in kindness and in gentleness, we need to learn lessons that even great men of God from the past have failed in. And I give these two as examples. This is the outline that will follow, which you have there in your notes. The first point I want to make is just let's rivet it in our minds that family, our family is ministry. Let's see our family as ministry. I really had to think about this in relation to Bill Mollett's session. He spoke of business as mission, family as mission. All we do should be mission and ministry. But if we can just come back to seeing our family as the primary ministry, that's my first calling. I was married before I became a minister. I took the responsibilities of being a loving father, a loving husband first, and then a father to my children. And yes, God has called me to other duties, but my first calling is in the home. And that is so important that I just establish that and understand that. And we'll talk a bit later how we dichotomize our lives, and let's just see our family as ministry. I want to quickly tell you two other stories. Samuel Wesley, I'm not sure if you know who he is, but as I tell you the story, you'll recognize two of his boys at least. But Samuel Wesley disagreed with his wife on many occasions. In their home, they had 19 children, and it was not a home of peace and harmony between husband and wife. They disagreed over loyalty to the king, and they could not reconcile their political differences. Samuel told his wife, if there were two sovereigns, there would be two beds. And that's that was his way to end the disagreement. And so he packed himself off to London. He left. Now, they were later reunited, but that is the home culture that John and Charles Wesley were born into. Samuel was not actively involved in his children's lives. He left that largely to Susanna, his wife, to do the child rearing. The second story I want to tell you is of Philip Henry. And again, you may not know who Philip Henry is, but I'm sure you will know his son. Philip Henry had a son named Matthew, and I want to just read a few things from his life, from the writings of Matthew Henry. Till he was an upgrown lad, Matthew Henry was constantly in his father's company. He followed him around wherever he went. He was aware how much his father prayed in secret, and he heard his daily expositions and exhortations at the worship of family, When Philip Henry had family devotions, he called all the servants. He called everyone, his children, his servants, and he expounded the scriptures to them. And his son Matthew took notes. And Matthew Henry's commentary is, for a large part, from the expositions that his father gave in family worship and his influence over the years. So they had a remarkable relationship in their growing up years. He was there for his father and for his son, Philip Henry was, and influenced him greatly. Now, I ask you, which one do you want to be? Which father do you want to be like? And by God's grace, even Samuel Wesley's children were influential in the kingdom. But, you know, Samuel Wesley, another thing about him is he was very adamant about his calling. He wanted to, he was writing a commentary on the book of Job. So he would seclude himself to a room, and he would be writing these important things. And today, if you, which man really left his writing the best? Was it Samuel Wesley, whose ambition was to be a great author and leave this commentary that was to be well received? Or was it Philip Henry, who really poured himself into his children's lives? And I think it's that way. It's kind of ironic, the story, if you think of the irony of it, how I don't think you have Samuel Wesley's commentary on the book of Job, but you probably do have Matthew Henry's. And Matthew Henry's father is really, even though he didn't seek that recognition and that esteem, that's how his life's work went down in history. Someone made this observation, which I altered and repeat. You can lose your ministry and keep your marriage, your family, but you can't lose your marriage, your family, and keep your ministry. I think that's so true. You know, as we, as men, we're in ministry, positions of leadership. We need to remember that, you know, that's our first calling, and we can probably lose our ministry and keep our home, but it's not so easy the other way around. I want to ask this question, and if you have an observation, maybe Dan, you can give that, but do we have to choose between family or ministry? I think it's an unnecessary dichotomy. It really is. It's not one or the other. We need to see our family as ministry. That is what our family is. If I do well, and our children all have to make their own choices, and some children are going to make choices that are that bring grief to their parents' heart. I acknowledge that. But if I put my life into my family and into my home, that can become the springboard or the foundation for my ministry. That's really the way I see it in my life. But if I seek for my ministry or my influence outside the home, outside my family, in a way I'm eroding the very thing I'm trying to do. See, men, as men, we want that. God created us with a desire to make an impact, to do something for Him, and that gives us fulfillment. That's how we're wired. But so often a man will go outside the home to do that, and he will neglect his family so that he can have a successful ministry. But let's see our families as the ministry, and then God can give us, I think, other things along with it. This is the way I would see it, rather than in a dichotomy or fork in the road. I would see it as an interstate where you can you go parallel. You're going both ways, and there are two roads, and you can take either lane. They're both going, and sometimes you have to get from one lane to the other, and that's kind of how it is in our calling. Let's talk about meeting our family's needs. I did a survey that I drew some thoughts from, and I asked ladies these questions. What do you want most from your husband? What do you admire most about your husband? And if you could say something to encourage all husbands, what would it be? And my purpose in doing this is just to see, how can I, as a as a husband, meet the needs of my wife. What does she want? And I want to just give you some of the a brief synopsis of the results that I found. By far, near the top was quality time. Our wives need quality time. They really do. They really do. And I'm still learning this, as I'm sure you are. But that is a need. It's a need. A need is something you have to have, right? A need is not an option. It's something you have to have. And our wives need quality time. And it's impossible to develop an intimate relationship with the most important person on earth to us without spending quality time. So I'm going to talk a little bit later about goals. Linda and I just sat down and made some goals the other day. And one of the goals we made was to have couch time, just sit on the couch and talk. And that's so important, just quality time together. We're going to talk about some other ideas too. Unconditional love and acceptance was on the list. Friendship. A lady wants to be cherished. She wants to have that emotional need of friendship met. Also, I found in the survey over and over is spiritual leadership. Women long for us men to be spiritual leaders in our home, to take that responsibility, step up and lead the home, give spiritual leadership. Protection, security, gentleness. And I ask, what do you admire about your husband? Integrity, kindness, and helpful, expresses love to me even in front of the children, daily Bible reading, very quick to right a wrong, committed to God in our marriage, dedicated to our family. Now, I did ask this question, if you could say something to encourage all husbands, what would it be? And here are a few of the responses. Take time to read and pray and read the Word. Stay in tune with God. Love your wife unconditionally. Listen to wife and children. Lead with love. Do you see how that what they would encourage all husbands to do are related to their needs? That's, of course, true. You are so, so important to family life. Now, we're going to run out of time here, so I'm going to just refer you to the father survey that I did. And I want you to, you should have a handout there with the comments. I surveyed a sampling of mostly 18 to 22-year-olds, and this is the cry of their heart. And you will see that as you go through here. Some of these brought tears to my eyes. I had to repent in some areas. And I, by God's grace, am going to... I'm changing in a few areas. I had a discussion with my children already. But I want you to take time to read those. I especially want you to go to the question, what are some of the deepest regrets? What is the deepest regret you have with your father? Please take time to read that. Please take time. So essential to look at that. Spencer, my clock up here is wrong. So we're to be done at 1 or at 2:05? Okay. Okay, my clock here is telling me 10 minutes. That's why I was starting to panic. So 2:05. Thank you, Spencer. What I want to do here is focus on the what are your deepest regrets about your father? Everything else is there. You can read it. He doesn't ask me how I'm doing spiritually very often. This is a son. I wish he would. We talk more about deeper things of life. Fathers, that's what it's all about. Talk with our boys. And that's where it hit me. It's like, you know, I talk with my sons, but do I really, I ask them how they're doing spiritually, but I'm going to do it more. I'm going to do it more often. So I took that one really to heart. This is one that I'm speaking of, the next one. You know, that's we're in ministry. Is this true of us? This son said that he is so busy, this was his regret, with church meetings, or church things, meetings and such, that it cut down on the time you spent with me. I also regret that I did not take more time out of my schedule to be with him when he had free time. So it goes both ways. Okay, the son's wise to see that. But as fathers, are we too busy with ministry that we're neglecting our primary ministry? Here's another one. My son said, my deepest regret is that he never really asked me how I was doing with purity. As a teenager, I struggled a lot and just wanted someone to come ask me how I was doing. And since he never asked, it took a long time for me to open up about it on my own. The daughters, here are some of the cries of their heart, that he did not tell me the regret, that he did not tell me often, more often than verbally, that he loved me. You know, that's something a daughter really longs to hear. Did you know that? Your daughter longs to hear, if you have a daughter, she longs to hear you as a father say, I love you. And it even means more if you put your arm around her and hug her when you tell her that. Daughters long to have that. I wish he would have affirmed or encouraged me more often. He was afraid of conflict, thus I felt ignored and just an unnoticed servant. Oh, brothers, let's step up and be a daddy to our children. I only got hugs from him after a spanking. Very few times of I love you or words of praise and encouragement. Well, there are quite a few things in there. I'm just paging through here real quickly. Too busy at times, that's the negative. But here's the positive, and maybe this is how we all feel. Too busy at times, but yet still very much involved in my life. Isn't that beautiful? This son or daughter saw that, hey, my daddy was too busy at times, but he was still very much involved in my life. And I sure don't know that balance. That's why we will take a time at the end. You tell me what the balance is. I don't have regrets except that one day I will lose him from my life. Isn't that beautiful? I don't have any regrets except that one day I will lose him from my life. That's beautiful. Okay, well, let's move on. Here's one I wanted to bring out. In my childhood, my dad spent more time at work since he owned his own business. Now, probably for us here today, I mean, maybe we have businesses, but probably for us it's ministry. You know, and some involvement with ministry. And then the second part was even sadder yet. But when he was at home, he spent much of his time working on the next project. What's the next project? Well, you know, sometimes when I go in my lane, I don't do this as often as I should, but when I come in, you know, my driveway, I think, okay, now what I did today was important. I had to be at the office. I had to do, you know, my vocation. But what I'm doing right now, what I'm going home to now, is more important than that. This is much more important than that. And, you know, step up, Tim. Yeah, you know, some days we're tired and you want to step up. This is more important than what you just spent your last 8 hours doing, or however long it was. And that's why there's a lot of projects that aren't done around my house. It won't take you long to see that if you come visit. But by God's grace, there's a relationship there that's most rewarding to go home to, just to be with my wife and my children. What is your deepest regret? In my childhood, my dad spent more time, that work ministry obligations sometimes prevented him from spending time with the family. So I'm bringing these out and highlighting the ones that really pertain to our subject. We are in the ministry. How can we, let's use these regrets that we hear to balance us and to bring us back. Sometimes, you know, if a page is bent and you want to straighten that page back out, you got to bend it the other way. Let's bend it the other way. Okay, we've been, you know, we know that the tendency for fathers is to be uninvolved and bent this way. Let's straighten that paper back out and make it lie flat. Okay, I think we'll skip over these. I did want to just have those there for you, so it's all right there for you to review. Here's my closing comment on this section. Oh, busy fathers, let us remember that love cannot be spelled to our families without the letters T-I-M-E. We cannot love our families without spending time with them. And an absent father is going to, who's not there in his whole, involved in his children's lives, really, they will sense that loss. Okay, I want to transition to treasuring my marriage. And this is an area that, you know, as men, and we think of taking care of our wife and our children, this is the best gift we can give our children, is to love their wife, to love my wife is the best gift that I can give to my children. My brother Merv's here in the back, and Merv, you remember Dad telling us that often. He would say, the best way I can love my children is to love my wife. It's so true. It's so true. And children can sense when there's disharmony, when there's tension in the air. You see it in some of the comments there. It's not hard to figure that out. Let's focus on our marriages. Let's treasure our marriage, and our children will be so blessed. I like this little poem someone put together. It is the little rift within the lute that by and by will make the music mute. That means the music stop, okay? And ever widening, slowly silence all. The little rift within the lover's lute, or little pitted speck in garnered fruit, that's rotting inward, slowly molders all. So it's the little speck, the little rift, or little, if you're playing, my daughter's learning to play a flute, and you know, you got to hold it just right. And if you have a imperfection in there, it's not going to sound right. What are some practical tips? Here are some that I found in my life to set goals together. I mentioned that. And, you know, just taking time to sit down, and Linda was so good to just help me with this. You know, what are some goals that we want to set? And so we listed half a dozen, six, seven, eight goals that we were going to do. And one of the goals is date night. You know, date night, we've done this over the years, not always as consistently, you know, when the children are all small and it's harder to do that. But we've found it such a blessing to have a date night. And our children, you know, now that they're older, they see the value of that, and they say, hey, Dad and Mom, you need to have a date again. You know, they want to protect that and set a time. Why don't we do it on this night? We'll watch the children, and you can go. And so they love it when we, you know, they see us come back all smiles and happy, and they see what it does for our marriage. And so a date night is so important. A suggestion for you young fathers, if you have, your children aren't old enough to, your older ones to babysit, you know, your children. One thing we did in our marriage, we had a date swap night with two other couples. There were three couples, and we would drop the children off at one of the couples, and then the other two couples would have a date night. Okay, then next month it was another couple's turn, and we'd, you know, drop our children off at the at that home, and then the other two couples could go. And so that worked very well. We one night where you don't have to be a babysitter, you don't have to pay anyone because, you know, your turn's coming later. And so it was just that was a really blessing. And we have many memories of those date nights. Wouldn't trade them for anything in the world. Just beautiful times together. And many times, you know, walks, summer walks, special times together. Here I have one, established romantic traditions. Can't really tell you what mine are. They're too personal. But just romantic traditions that you establish with your wife, and just so important for a woman to have that romance that continues. One thing I've tried to do when I'm away, and this is again just a practical tip, is to call home daily. And you know, sometimes if you're overseas or something, it's a little hard to do, but Skype, and it's easier nowadays than it ever was. But just that daily contact really means a lot to a wife. Don't skimp on the flowers and gifts. I really believe this. One thing we do in our home, Mother's Day, Linda always gets to choose a plant. She's been getting into English roses, so, and this is a plant that we plant outside. So now along our sidewalk, we have a whole row of Mother's Day English roses, and that was a gift on Mother's Day. So I'm a firm believer that, you know, if a guy's too tight to buy his wife flowers or special gifts, he's going to pay for it bigger down the road in other areas. Let's show our, why would we wait until they someone dies to give them the flowers? Let's give them the flowers while they live. It's true. We hear that, but it's true. And let's just cherish our dear wife that God has given us. This is what I'm learning to do yet, is just to share the stresses and the burdens of life. As men, we don't often, sometimes it's a challenge for us to open up. And I come home sometimes and, you know, things are on my mind with church or with, you know, work, and, you know, I'm like a clam, and that's wrong. So I'm learning slowly to just open up. And often, if I share the stresses and the burdens, if I don't, you know what my wife thinks, what Linda thinks? She thinks it's her. She thinks she did something wrong, and here I am, you know, just being sullen. And that's wrong, God forbid. I tell her, don't you know, after all these years, it's not you, it's just me, I'm the problem. But no, she wants that communication. So I've learned that when I share the stresses and burdens in my life, it makes it easier for me. And often, they kind of just, I can just let them go away. Whereas if I don't, boy, they sit there on my shoulder, kind of, you know. And so that's what God gave marriage for, and I just am so thrilled to be able to share that. Pray together every day. I'm not going to take time to read the motif that I have there, but just some personal observations that I have written down, just my ambition for marriage, and by God's grace, as I ended here, my marriage is a sacred trust. By God's grace, I will keep it. Okay, let's talk about giving our heart to our children. Just some practical tips. Pray individually with the children. I know my boys are, you know, I told them just a month or so ago, I said, okay, guys, I'm going to, you know, one morning each week, we're going to meet and we're going to talk, you know, and pray together. And so, you know, you can set a schedule for that. You probably, if you don't schedule, it's not as easy to have it happen. But, you know, our children need that. They look forward to that. There was a time when we would, when I would take each of the children for a walk, especially when they were younger. Boy, they loved that, you know. Daddy goes on a walk with them. So we just went and walked. And, you know, some of them, the girls, you know, they just chatter, you know, whatever. But talking and taking a walk with Daddy. Another thing I've also done is ask my children to write on a 3x5 card how I can pray for them. And I remember the response, you know, that just the appreciation for being involved and wanting to know what's on their hearts so that we can, they can let me know so I can pray for them. I'll take individual walks with my children. I have a date with each child on his birthday. We do that in our home. Again, it's a bit of an investment because dad, you know, takes them out to eat or, you know, takes them on a little date. And some months, you know, it's like, wow, you know, that's a little bit of an investment there. But I'm convinced, and I have a little book I take along. It's just an empty notebook, and I write things in. Okay, I ask them questions, you know, like, well, what are some of the main things that you're struggling with right now? Or what are what are your interests? What do you enjoy doing? And I take little notes, and then the next year, you know, it's sometimes fun to go, hey, Dad, what did we write down last year? You know, we can review it, and just a time alone with Dad. And they look forward to that so much. And one daughter just turned 13. So then when they're 13, Daddy and Mommy both take them out. Before that, you know, it was agreed that I'd be the one to take them out. And once they turn 13, then Dad and Mom both take them out and see how is it. I think once they're 16, we go together again after that. But just just the time to date the children, to have a relationship with them. take an interest in their hobbies and their dreams and the goals they have. I try to do this. It sometimes degenerates, but use the family table constructively. There's nine around the table. It can be loud, but try to use it constructively. Okay, guys, everyone quiet, and let's talk about this. Or what do y'all think about this? And just to develop, to be involved. You can be there or not be there. So I want to be there and be there. So let's use all these times. One thing we've done in our home is we've established a family night. And this started with when we were with Olive Branch in Grenada. The board really recommended that we take a night each week as a family night, and we've kept up that tradition, and it's been a wonderful time. Family traditions. Well, we're running out of time, so practical guide. I try to involve the whole family in ministry, and I ask the whole family before taking new assignments, especially large ones like a week of meetings or something like this. Share stories and seek to instill a vision. Back to this, it's not always a popular vote that carries, but we try to be involved. And if the family is not for it, I don't feel the blessing to pursue. Share stories and seek to instill a vision for the work. If I'm involved in an activity, take the children along when it's appropriate and possible. It's important to set limits, I think. I'm one that is perhaps too quick to say, I'm sorry, I won't be able to take that assignment. And I don't believe it's possible to be in ministry and not disappoint others at times. Not that we have that mindset, but just, we just cannot be all things to all men and take care of our families, I don't believe. And so we discuss, if you discuss with your wife and agree on the limit, and then if you have an agreement, if you go over the limit, then it takes mutual consent. I think fathers of young children need to limit evening meetings and times away overnight. Those are stresses that go with our work. I realize that, but I have tried to make that in my home, and I know that each family has it different, but if I'm away all the time, I cannot be there for my young children. And so that's my first calling, and things have to be second to that. I think it's important to give our family equal priority, and if you have a scheduled activity, that you keep it. And I have heard, our children and our wife will know if we have time for others and not for them. And I have heard it hurts and resentments that come out when fathers, especially ministers or people in ministry organizations, they're always helping people, but they never have time for their children. And what actually happens, I've heard, and for testimonies, is that there's a resentment that starts building toward God. He's competition for my father, my daddy, and I want to protect that. Well, I said we're going to take time for dialogue, and I have a few more slides here. So let's just quick flip through them, and then we'll have some open discussion. Ask family how I'm doing. Admit and learn from mistakes. It's okay to say I'm sorry. I need to do that for sure. Make adjustments, and don't let failures keep you down. Sometimes I get bogged down with discouragement because of, I'm not perfect. But just get up, and by God's grace, pick up the mantle and continue. And then I have some warning signs there that I would encourage you to look for. In myself, I listed the ones I personally would perhaps face. And in my marriage, things if I see, there are telltale signs that I need to pay attention. If you're wondering what this is about, there's a parting in this book, the true story of John G. Payton, and you could look it up online too. Just Google the parting of John G. Payton and his father. The price of this book is worth reading the story of when he said goodbye, when he left home to go to his training, to begin his training, and eventually he went, on the mission field. That story of when he went with his father walked with him, and they walked together for, I forget how many miles, and they could not bear to say goodbye. They would stop and they would try. And then the father would just keep walking with him again. And finally, they were able to say goodbye. And John went he had to just blindly run. He couldn't look back. But he decided to take one last look, and there he saw his dad, you know, back there. And I think that was the last time he ever saw his father. But it's worth the price of the book just to read that story, or you can look it up online. But my point in bringing that out is, let's be a daddy like that to our children. Now, our children will be going on planes probably when they leave, so we won't be saying goodbye in that manner. But the heart tug can be the same, whether you leave on a plane or you take a walk. Okay, what are your comments there that you would have? Any words of wisdom from you and things that you've found and true in this area?
Detail question on your suggestion for 3x5 prayer card for children. Call from you, update that or talk about that.
You know, I haven't been doing that as much lately. It was a little while ago, and that's the problem, that I don't have a detailed system. But I have done it in the past a bit more than recently. And preparing for this, I was like, you know, I need to get those 3x5 cards out again. If you meet with your children regularly, you know, in between, just to pray together, you know, kind of takes the place of that, I suppose. But it's kind of nice if they can write out, you know, I know my dad, he wants pray for me, and I'm going to write down what he should pray about. It kind of does something to the child. And I think mine were a little longer than that even. But then sometimes I'd say, hey, how's it going in this area, you know, if you follow up. Maybe you have a tidbit of something that's really, you know, made a difference in your family, in your ministry, something that you found's true with you want to share with fathers.
I was intrigued. You same as Bill Mullet couldn't separate business and missions. You really can't.
No, you shouldn't. Yeah. You shouldn't.
And the same way that you just absolutely can't. Mm-hmm. And the way that you, everybody has their own opportunity or thing, but somehow make them involved with what you're doing.
Yeah.
Even if it's talking about some of the projects you're doing. And there's one that stuck with me. I got it from the South some years ago, and it was to ministers for their congregation. And that is, you've got to love your people, listen to your people, and then you can lead your people. Mm-hmm. And that's dads too. Mm-hmm. And I just so believe that without a shadow of doubt. If you watch the Bible, through is God's love just over and over. And you know if you're a Christian or not, if you love, you know, God's so intrigued in that. And then he also calls for us to pray. And you haven't got a busy signal yet, have we, in our prayer time. Mm-hmm. And that's in place, and then he has a word that leads us faithfully and orderly. And I believe that if we dads do that in that order, too often we take it the other way. We get intrigued by this charting, this course, and get bogged down. And we, that's why we need to love this child, too, and kind of get over there. But put the other two in place, and then the leading is somewhat of a...
Yeah.
Only right.
Thank you.
And we would feel that as a member of the church, we'd feel that from the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to tell you that.
That's right. Let's go at it. Let's be dads, okay? That's a final call. Okay, God bless you in your Christmas.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.